Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, coming up today, I know many people who detox on a regular basis. You might even do it yourself. I've half-heartedly attempted it sometimes. But Whole Detox is the first book I've come across that looks at detoxing the whole self. Dr. Diana Minich has done extensive research to develop a 21-day personalized program that takes a fully integrated holistic approach to detoxing, from physical toxins and health systems to negative thoughts and emotional baggage. And we'll talk today with her in the second half of today's show. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome back Dr. Craig Malkin. He is a lecturer in psychology for Harvard Medical School and a licensed psychologist with over two decades of experience helping couples, individuals, and families. His research on the role of relationships is in psychological growth has been published in many, many publications. You've probably seen him in Time, the New York Times, the Sunday Times, Psychology Today, and Women's Health. And he's been on numerous media channels, including NPR, CBS Radio, and the Oprah Winfrey Network channel. He is the president and director of the Cambridge, Massachusetts-based YM Psychotherapy and Consultation, Inc., which provides psychotherapy and evidence-based couples workshops. And his book has just come out in paperback. It's called Rethinking Narcissism, The Secret to Recognizing and Coping with Narcissists. Dr. Craig Malkin, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me back, Vicki.
Well, very pleased to have you back. And it actually was almost exactly a year since we last spoke. We last spoke last August when your book was launched originally. It's just come out in paperback, and I understand it's doing extremely well.
It seems to be, yeah. Fingers crossed. It seems to be resonating with so many people, and between the book and videos that I've been doing to try to help people understand this a little bit better, I think I'm getting the word out.
So why do you think it's doing so well? Because it's a slightly different approach. We talked about this last time, and I think for the benefit of those who didn't hear you last time, we should just look at your take on narcissism and the spectrum. And then we can talk about some issues that we didn't cover last time. So why do you think it's doing so well, first of all?
I think one thing that it offers that people have been hungry for is a way of understanding this where they can protect themselves and they can see danger more easily. Because what I do in the first three quarters of Rethinking Narcissism is really explain in as clear a way as possible what is bad about narcissism in ways that people are not used to hearing about. As when people hear the word narcissism or narcissist, they tend to have this image of vain, preening, primping, boastful braggarts, reality TV types. Donald Trump's name has been thrown around a lot.
Right.
The problem is that that's really a caricature. It's really a stereotype of both narcissism and narcissist, because what we know from the research, and this is what I think is really speaking to people, what we know from the research is that not all narcissists care about looks or fame or money, and some can be extremely quiet. So if you get too distracted by that stereotypical image, then you miss signs of danger that have nothing to do with, say, vanity or greed. And so what I do is I make it very easy for people to spot using what I think of as tells that are common to all kinds of extremely narcissistic people, regardless of how it presents.
Right.
And maybe we can get into some of those variations. But I think that's one of the reasons that it's really speaking to people.
Yes, definitely. So I think one of the things that I was surprised to read in the book, because I kind of think, you know, of the stereotypical narcissist as being a big old show-off, but you say that they bury normal emotions like fear and sadness and loneliness and shame because they're afraid they'll be rejected for having them.
Precisely. So that's one of the core problems that anybody who's extremely narcissistic struggles with, regardless of the type of narcissism. Let me just say a little bit about that. The classic image that we have is a really extroverted narcissist.
Right.
The person who ascends the stage and brags, and they're very outgoing, and they can be really loud and domineering. But we know from the research that there are two other kinds that really don't bear a resemblance to that. One I call introverted narcissists. These are people who agree with statements like, most people don't understand, or actually nobody understands the kinds of problems I have. Or I'm temperamentally different from most other people.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously this isn't about self-esteem. This is about different ways of feeling unique, whether it's positive or negative, feeling special, a way of standing out from the other 7 billion people on the planet. And another way of doing it is something called communal narcissism. That's newer. And these are people who agree with statements like, I'm the most helpful person I know.
Hey, I know somebody like that.
It's marvelous. But what they all have in common is, yes, they have a particular kind of insecurity called insecure attachment. They've had experiences that have left them feeling like they cannot trust that if they are sad or scared or lonely, that they will be able to turn to one special person or persons and feel understood and cared about, and like that person has their back no matter what. So they turn to feeling special addictively.
Mm-hmm.
So back to definition. First of all, narcissist is not a diagnosis. I should say that up front. It just means somebody higher in traits of narcissism than the average person. I want to keep it simple for everyone here who's listening. That I'm going to use the word narcissist, as people often do, to mean extremely narcissistic and maybe even disordered, just to keep it simple.
Right.
If you think of the core of narcissism as this drive to feel special, then think about narcissists and people who even become disordered as they addictively soothe themselves with this experience of feeling exceptional, unique, so much so that they turn away from love, honesty, truth. Just like anybody, if they struggle with an extreme addiction, they wind up doing whatever it takes to get their high. So I think this provides a very coherent way of understanding all different kinds of narcissism and narcissists, and even how it becomes dangerous.
Right. You talk about the dark triad. I wonder if you'd just very quickly cover those other two traits that that push this to the top end of the narcissism spectrum.
Yeah, as soon as you start winding up in the extreme range of narcissism, you know, moving towards disorder, there's a lot of overlap in some of what are often in personality research called dark triad traits. One of them is narcissism. It's usually measured as this extroverted narcissism we just talked about, unfortunately. So it's a very specific kind. But when it's really high, it tends to overlap with psychopathy, which is, you can think of as a remorseless pattern of lies and manipulation. These are people who lie to your face without really flinching repeatedly. And they do it all too well. And the third, there's actually a dark tetrad now. I didn't get into that in the book, so we might as well talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the other traits is Machiavellianism. That's sort of a cutthroat, do whatever it takes to achieve my goal personality. And then there's sadism, which is taking pleasure in other people's pain. It's exactly what it sounds like. People who score high on all of these traits can be very dangerous to be in relationships with. If you want to think of a good popular image example of a dark tetrad personality, think of TV's House MD,
right?
Gregory
right,
House,
right?
Classic dark tetrad.
Interesting. A lot of things surprise me reading this book, because I do think we have this, you know, general opinion of what it means out there. But you say you're a nature nurture guy, and narcissists are victims of nature and nurture. I wonder if you'd touch lightly on that for us.
Absolutely. We know from the research, some really good longitudinal research. This is where you study people over time. The way I often think of it is you can sort of do research in a couple of ways, by and large, when you're trying to understand what's going on, what makes people tick or what they look like. One is a sort of snapshot in time, which is how research on narcissism, where we talk about things like the narcissism epidemic, is often done. It's just one snapshot in time. And then you can trace people over time. That's longitudinal research. Think of that like a movie. We have a pretty good movie of what happens to people from preschool age, done by a researcher named Phoebe Kramer, where she even developed a measure for early precursors for unhealthy narcissism. Things like always needing to be the center of attention. They won't surprise you to hear them.
Right.
Being a bully, being overly melodramatic, even for a preschooler.
Right.
And it turns out, not surprisingly, that the preschoolers are scored high on this measure that Phoebe Kramer created. Later on in life, we're more likely to become extremely narcissistic. With one caveat or qualifier, we'll say, they had to have a kind of parenting that left them feeling like they weren't fully understood. A kind of parenting, say, like authoritarian parenting, which is all about being really strict, not paying attention to the children's needs and feelings and helping them talk about them, not being attuned emotionally to your children. And it was the parents who had that kind of misattunement in combination with, call it, this difficult temperament. Those are the people who, by the time they got into their late teens and early 20s, again, this has followed over 20 years, those were the ones who turned out to be extremely narcissistic. Even the kids who showed those early signs, if they had the kind of parenting that is often called authoritative parenting, mm-hmm. a balance of warmth and structure, where you talk to your children about what they're feeling and what they need, where you leave them feeling secure that if they are sad or scared or lonely, that they can turn to and depend on others for comfort and care, and they can trust that secure attachment. So in other words, if they had the kind of parenting that helped them feel securely attached, they didn't become extremely narcissistic.
That's so interesting.
You know, this is a point I want to highlight. You cannot be extremely narcissistic and securely attached. We already know that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's kind of the opposite that we think of, I think, when you do think of narcissists. But
the insecurity.
I kind of thought narcissists were so full of themselves, but it's great we're having this conversation that, you know, they so full of themselves that insecurity wasn't even in their vocabulary.
What's fascinating is that they are deeply insecure in all kinds of ways and often bury it even from themselves, but it comes out in other studies. There was a fascinating study where the researchers took people who are extremely narcissistic, and they hooked them up to a fake lie detector test. They had one group that scored high enough to be narcissists who was hooked up to what they thought was a lie detector test, and then another group wasn't hooked up to this fake lie detector. And then they asked them how they felt about themselves after previously scoring them on self-esteem. Like how high would they score on self-esteem? Traditionally, narcissists, particularly outgoing type, will say, I'm awesome, I'm great, I'm fantastic in all kinds of ways, and I feel awesome about myself. But when they hooked them up to the lie detector test, they did not feel good about themselves.
That's interesting. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Sorry, go ahead and finish that thought there.
No, that's it.
Okay. So we'll take a quick break. When we come back, I want to look at, you know, what do we do if we're the narcissist, and then talk a little bit more about the stop signs that you mentioned earlier, about how we put the brakes on if we're with a narcissist, and how we can either live with them or get rid of them. One way or the other. The book is called Rethinking Narcissism, The Secret to Recognizing and Coping with Narcissists. And Dr. Craig Malkin is my guest. We will be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Nobody else here, no one like me.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Coming up September 26th on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, science and environmental journalist Mary Ellen Hannibal returns to discuss her latest book, Citizen Scientist. It's the story of how one woman rescued herself from grief. Along the way, her recovery inspired her to take a different look at loss in the world at large, resulting in a blueprint for action based on a new kind of science that may finally prepare Earth for our children. Tune in Mondays at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Ready to shake things up? Try Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Well, we're talking with Dr. Craig Malkin. He's a lecturer in psychology for Harvard Medical School and a licensed psychologist with over two decades of experience. And you can find him in publications all over the place, Psychology Today, the Times, Huffington Post. And his book has just launched in paperback. It launched in hardback last year, just launched in paperback. It's called Rethinking Narcissism: The Secret to Recognizing and Coping with Narcissists. And I wanted to ask you, Dr. Malkin, in this segment, what if you read this book or listen to this conversation and you start thinking to yourself, I think I'm a narcissist. Is there hope?
Absolutely. There is, first of all, anybody who comes to me who is worried that they might be narcissistic, who has been diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder, and I see a lot of people naturally, and if they have a commitment to doing the work, which can be difficult, and it takes courage, I have great respect and admiration for anybody who shows up in my office, particularly when they're looking at themselves and they think, I'm extremely narcissistic, I show these signs, which we should probably get in. Let me just briefly mention those. The signs of core pathology I call triple E, which cuts across all these different kinds of narcissism. And I go into this in Rethinking Narcissism, but it's a empathy impairment or dysfunctional empathy where the person's so preoccupied or internally concerned that they can't hear or see what other people are feeling and going through. Exploitation, acting, doing whatever it takes, no matter what the cost to other people to get your needs met. And entitlement, acting as the world and other people owe you. I call that triple E. As soon as somebody is addictively using feeling special,
right,
then they will demonstrate that core of pathology. They're more likely to have narcissistic personality disorder. So as we already discussed, what's going on here is this is an attempt to cope with insecure attachment. To the extent that people can depend on others, I'm speaking to anybody out there who has been diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder or is extremely narcissistic, who wants to do the work, you need to roll up your sleeves and really get in touch with all of these feelings that are very difficult to acknowledge and allow yourself to feel the sadness, the fear, the loneliness. We call these primary emotions in emotion research. Because to the extent that you're able to turn to people with those feelings and depend on them, you will not depend on feeling special.
Interesting.
You've got another way. In other words, you can learn to feel special to other people in relationships. That's really, in my opinion, the cure for pathological narcissism, is to be able to develop a more secure attachment style. It means really pushing yourself to recognize that, for example, when you are behaving arrogantly or putting somebody down, that there is some underlying feeling. Maybe it's a fear, feeling of being unworthy or not good enough.
Right, right.
That you handle by one of these strategies that's a tell that I go through in rethinking narcissism for any kind of extremely narcissistic person, called emotional hot potato, which is I don't want to feel this way. Here, you take it.
Right.
So you say and do things to make the other person feel, say, insecure or unsure of themselves, so you don't have to feel that way. Like, are you sure that's really what you want to wear? You want to wear that dress? I don't know that looks good on you. You know, this is instead of saying, you know what, I'm not feeling really great about how things are going at work, and I'm feeling really shaky right now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're willing to do that work, absolutely, yes. You can do what I call sliding back down the spectrum to a healthy place.
And so, sometimes reading your book, it's very obvious that there are times when it's very difficult to spot a narcissist. What are some of those hard-to-tell signs?
The signs of subtle narcissism, very often, again, if somebody is, this is what I refer to as subtle narcissism or subtle narcissists, are very often people can be warm and empathic. You feel like everything is fine in the relationship. But then there are these moments, and they're usually moments when, unbeknownst to you, their sense of specialness has been undermined in some way. Maybe they've always done really, really well at work, and they've never had to question their sense of value that comes from that, and they rely heavily on it. And then something happens to shake that up. They don't get the big promotion or whatever. And suddenly they show what I call an entitlement surge. Now you feel like all you're doing is catering to their ego in one way or another. You know, constantly, you know, they're not necessarily saying I'm scared, but you feel like you have to walk on eggshells and be really careful not to leave them feeling more unsure of themselves. If they're an introverted narcissist or if they're an extroverted narcissist, they might even start to become use more put-downs, undermine your own sense of value. This is the entitlement surge. Suddenly they act as if the world and other people owe them in ways that you hadn't seen before. But even people who are subtly narcissistic have these tells, like I mentioned, emotional hot potato. Here's another good one, stealth control. Because people who are extremely narcissistic don't like to depend on others, they're not necessarily going to come out and directly ask for what they want. So instead, often they arrange events and experience to get their needs met. So great example, I had a client whose boyfriend would always come home with tickets to a concert at the last minute, sort of sweep her off her feet, and it was really exciting, it was really fun. But it took her a while to realize that whenever she wanted to do something like check out the new restaurant, he's like, I'm too tired or it's too far. And you know, great example, because this is you're not being abused.
Mm.
But it's in this insidious way, suddenly you're falling into the range of another person's needs and feelings and preferences entirely in their orbit. And you don't even realize it's happening until you're there. That is a much subtler form that it can take. But again, so that's called stealth control.
I should think that's very hard to get out of, too, because it is so subtle and such a gradual process to when you fall into that.
Absolutely. It's akin to what I often call the frog in boiling water syndrome.
Yeah.
Where you start to adjust yourself more and more. And this is, you know, let's touch on this. This is where we know from the research, I talked about narcissism as the drive to feel special. Well, it turns out that the vast majority of people around the world need that a little bit. That's what healthy narcissism is. It kind of gives us rose-colored glasses, helps us feel more resilient and persistent in the face of failure, to quote University of Washington psychologist Jonathan Brown. People who are happy and healthy often feel exceptional or unique, not average. Now, the reason that's important is when we lack those rose-colored glasses, that is what I call echoism. Echo is the nymph who was cursed to repeat back the last few words that she heard, and she fell in love with Narcissus as he fell in love with his own reflection. And this is straight out of our research on the spectrum, like Echo, people who struggle with echoism tend to fall into relationships with extremely narcissistic partners. So I wanted to help people who struggle with echoism. This is the other rethink in the book.
Yes.
Find their voice to protect themselves in relationships.
Well, it's packed full of really great examples in here, and it's very, very accessible. I mean, I read this almost straight through. It's quite fascinating. And I want to finish, because we only have a couple of minutes here, I want to finish with the chapter on social media, because we've talked about this before. I interview a lot of neuroscientists and psychologists, and the general consensus is that social media can lead to depression because people see these other people having these great lives, and there they are stuck at the kitchen sink washing dishes or whatever. This was a very funny chapter in the book, because you talk about your foray into social media, and I wonder if you'd share your point of view on that.
Yeah, so briefly, I'm going to summarize all the points that I conclude from the research in the chapter in one hashtag, which I often use, which is hashtag share don't compare. Technology is only as healthy as our use of it, and that includes social media. There's so many competing ideas about what social media does or doesn't do to us. So this is what I wanted to pull together in the chapter. It makes us depressed. It makes us narcissistic. It isolates us. It connects us to people. Well, of course, it all depends on what we do with it. So the analogy I use is saying that Google Plus or Facebook cause loneliness or narcissism is like saying that Russia or Iceland cause cancer or unhappiness. It all depends on where you are and what you're doing when you're there.
Right.
So you want to think of the culture of social media. All different tools in social media, they all kind of work differently. But if you're using social media not passively, where you're comparing yourself to others and thinking, oh my gosh, my life is so boring, it's so awful, I feel so miserable, or the opposite end, that's going to make you feel depressed. The opposite end is where all you're about is posting selfies and tagging yourself in pictures and changing your profile image all the time. I call that image churning. Turns out that people who are, the more narcissistic people are, the more likely they are to image churn. So if you're using social media to reach out to others, to be authentic, right? This goes back to this idea of secure attachment. To the extent you can depend on people, you won't depend on feeling special. Same is true in social media. If you use it to be authentic and open, even if it means going offline to continue the conversation, you're not going to get caught up in how many likes you have or depressed by seeing other people living an amazing life while you feel you're stuck at home doing nothing.
Right, right. Well, it's a great read. The book is called Rethinking Narcissism, The Secret to Recognizing and Coping with Narcissists. And my guest, of course, Harvard psychology lecturer, Dr. Craig Malkin. A final quick thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Dr. Malkin?
Yes, absolutely. What we didn't get to talk about, the stop signs, I want to say this. If your question is my abusive partner narcissistic, and is that the problem, I want to redirect you. That's one of the stop signs, emotional or physical abuse. We shouldn't you know, regardless of whether or not the abuse is caused by narcissism or gambling addiction, tension over that, or a substance abuse problem, the problem is the abuse, and it's 100% the responsibility of the abuser to change it. There's nothing you can do. It's up to that person to stop their behavior first.
Great. Well, I appreciate you joining us today. The paperback just came out last month, I believe, Rethinking Narcissism, The Secret to Recognizing and Coping with Narcissists. And you can find out more about Dr. Craig Malkin at his website, drcraigmalkin.com. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And please stay with us. If you want to learn more about the spectrum that Dr. Malkin mentioned, you can find it in the previous conversation. Just go to conversationslive.net. And in the search box, type Craig Malkin, M-A-L-K-I-N, and that podcast will pop up and it's on there. Or you can just email me, info@conversationslive.net, and I will send you the information. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about whole detox next. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
I like your nose. I like your hair. I like your clothes. I like you bare. I like your boots, your skirts and your blouses. I like your suits, your shirts and your trousers. I like your mild political stances.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services, if you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com. or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Psst, it's me, your heart. High blood pressure is serious, and if you think I'm just going to keep ticking away, you're wrong. I can quit whenever I want, but I like my job. Just treat me better. Maybe we can do some exercise on occasion? After all, we're in this together.
Don't let your heart quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get yours to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
There's a reason they invented the internet. It's called 1150kknw.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Well, we're switching from the mind to the mind-body-spirit right now. We are going to talk with Dr. Deanna Minnick. She's an internationally recognized cutting-edge wellness and lifestyle medicine expert, and she's mastered the art of integrating ancient healing traditions with modern science. She takes a unique whole self approach to nutrition, looking at physiology, psychology, eating, and living within what she calls the seven systems of health. She's a five-time book author and founder of Food and Spirit, and she continues to do detox programs with individuals to help them achieve better health. And this is a very special detox program you'll find out in just a moment. Her new book is called Whole Detox, 21-Day Personalized Program to Break Through Barriers in Every Area of Your Life. Dr. Deanna Minnick, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's my pleasure. Well, you've got such an interesting and diverse background, really, because you've touched on so many things to get to where you're at. I wonder if you could just give us, you know, a very short synopsis of what drove you to do this kind of work and what brought you to this point with the book?
You know, I think all those paths usually start with a personal story. And so for myself, you know, always being very much into science, and I was kind of a nerd in that way. So science, medicine, biology, I was a biology major. But then I also looked into other healing traditions as I was trying to heal myself physically and also emotionally from many things. So I started looking into English literature. I minored in English literature, philosophy. And then I started studying yoga, and I even became a yoga teacher. And I studied world religions. I was really intrigued to find, how do you decipher truth from multiple systems? And so a scientist, truly, in their thinking, is really trying to look for patterns. So I found some patterns, and I started to put those together into Whole Detox, especially after clinical practice and working with other people, and starting to notice that there were certain things that would come together that I just realized, like, wow, I just have to put this together in such a way to bring people through this cohesive, integrated program.
Right.
So that's Whole Detox.
Right. And so you've worked over the years with many people who have detoxed, and, you know, they may have had great success for a week or two or a month or two, but then things started backsliding. So what was the big issue? Because that ultimately led you to this Whole Detox program.
Yeah, you're right. So I was doing a lot of nutritional detoxes. So my actual degrees in my profession was a nutritionist. And so I worked in a clinic where I did a lot of nutritional detoxification programs. And I found that people would have these amazing life experiences as they went through the programs. And so for some people, it was, you know, there were some physical things that happened. They might have lost weight and they felt better. They were sleeping better. But then there were some other people who they really brought up a lot of emotional things. And I realized that I wasn't really prepared to deal with those things. And then I had other people who wanted to end relationships. They wanted to quit their jobs. They wanted to move out of their house and into a different place and maybe even a different state. And so I realized that detox is much more than just nutrition. And I started looking into the history of detoxification and cleansing practices throughout religion and throughout medicine. And there really is this sense of looking at a whole self approach, because there's so many things that can happen as you go through that process, right, of cleansing and purging and purifying and starting to shift one's eating. And so I thought, well, why wouldn't I create a program that just brought it all together so that I am prepared when people want to end relationships or change their jobs or, you know, whatever any number of things would present as. So that's how I came up with more of a comprehensive approach. It is much more mind, body, spirit, and I think that that's how we operate as human beings. We don't operate in a silo of just changing our diet. When we change our diet, we change our lives. We change how we think. We change how we feel. And I realized that in my profession that no one was really bringing that fully together in programs. It was all kind of piecemeal. So you do a detox here, you focus on the liver. You do another detox here, you focus on the gut. Maybe you take a lot of supplements. Maybe you sit in a sauna. But no one was really connecting the physical changes in the modalities with what was happening emotionally for people.
Right, right. And so the five organs that people normally think of with detoxification, you say are the liver, the gut, lungs, kidneys, and of course the skin, which is the largest organ. You then break your detox. Whole detox is broken into seven systems, which you say we should read in order, not take them out of order, because they build upon one another. So I'd like to take a look at that. But I think before we have to take a quick break. So let's do that now, so we don't have to interrupt that.
Sounds good.
That
good
sudden
idea.
Flow there. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Dr. Deanna Minnick, and her book is Whole Detox, a 21-day personalized program to break through barriers in every area of your life. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at pause.org or call 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to New Pro Supplements, we cover the world of animals. This week, September 25th, it's an encore presentation. Join us to hear animal communicator, intuitive, medium, and Reiki master Darcy Pariso and Martha talk to the animals. Great calls and information for all. Plus, hear what Bamboo Elephant told Darcy about her situation, how she feels about it, and what you can do to help. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Coming up September 26th on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, science and environmental journalist Mary Ellen Hannibal returns to discuss her latest book, Citizen Scientist. It's the story of how one woman rescued herself from grief. Along the way, her recovery inspired her to take a different look at loss in the world at large, resulting in a blueprint for action based on a new kind of science that may finally prepare Earth for our children. Tune in Mondays at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Wherever you go, Alternative Talk 1150 is here for you.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. This is Vicki St. Clair. You're listening to Conversations Live, and my guest in this segment is Dr. Diana Minnick. And she takes a whole new approach to detoxing. She looks at the whole self in whole detox. And, you know, we don't have a great deal of time. There's never enough time to talk to our guests because they do such astounding work. But we're going to take a quick look at what Dr. Diana Minnick calls the seven systems, the seven health systems. And do you want to just set that up for us and then we'll start looking? I'll ask you which ones I want to look at.
Sure. Yeah. So these seven systems correlate to body parts, to our psychology, to our foods and our lifestyle. So each one is very complex, but I'll just take you through them quickly and show you what they're about. The first one is what I call the root. It's the color red. And by the way, each of these have color associations. So the root, the color red, it's everything about your physical body. The next one is the flow. It's associated with the color orange, and it's everything about your emotions. The fire is the color yellow. And it's everything in relationship to kind of our thinking self and our external making our way in the world self, you know, how we get jobs and what are we doing? How are we spending our energy? The fourth one is what I call the love, and it's associated with the color green. And it's all about how we give and receive love. It's a pretty obvious one by the name. The next one is called the truth, and it's the color aquamarine. And it's connected to how we speak our truth, how we live our truth. And when it comes to eating, kind of like what are our eating truths? How do we speak and how do we take things in at the level of the mouth? The next one is the insight, and it correlates to the color indigo, which is like a blue-purple. And it's all about the brain. It's about sleeping and dreaming and cognition, but kind of at a deeper knowledge base, a consciousness level. And then the last one is what's called spirit, and it's the color white, and it's the non-physical parts of us. So now each of these are, you know, you can do a questionnaire, and you can kind of figure out where do you have imbalances. So, for example, you know, you might find that you have an issue with your flow, which is the emotional system. But it may not have anything to do with emotions per se. There are many layers to the flow. It might have something to do with your water intake. It might have something to do with the fact that you don't take enough orange-colored foods in your diet. So as we go through, and as you ask me questions, Vicki, just keep in mind that there are layers within each of these. And so the questionnaire tries to get at what those layers are for that particular person.
Right. And the questionnaire is in the book, and I did it. It's quite lengthy, but I mean, it was really interesting. It's very simple to take. And I don't know if this had anything to do with it, but yesterday on the way back from the beach, I had to stop at the store and pick up organic carrots. I had this craving for carrots. Orange. But I did the test myself, and I was pretty balanced in all areas except fire, which we'll get into in a moment. But I want to just take a deeper look at root, because this is where you say we're being present, we're in a vibrant, healthy body. I love the fact that in the book you give omnivore and vegan solutions. So this really is for everybody. But what are we talking about, say, if we have an imbalance in root, what are we talking about there? What's going on with us?
Yeah. So the root is about how you sit in your body. So are you present in your body? Do you connect to your body? Are you connected to your body's instinct? Do you feel safe in your body? It's all about your physical being. And it's also about your identity. And that could be measured as the immune system. It could be the DNA. It could be connection to family and tribe and community. So the themes for the root are all around safety, survival, and tribe. So for somebody that has an overactive root, and so things are kind of on overdrive for them in this system of health, they might have lots of inflammation in the body. They might have skin inflammation or some issues with skin, because that's kind of the barrier, the boundary between oneself and the environment. There might be pain somewhere that's causing us to have attention. Usually the root is all about the low body too. So the legs, the feet, really grounding to the earth. So some people that are overactive in the root, they can be kind of stuck in their minds too. You know, they might be somebody who could be have more body weight in the lower part of the body. And that kind of coincides with, or it can, just with, you know, they get kind of people that get stuck in their groove. They get stuck in ruts, whether it's eating ruts, work ruts, life ruts, and they need to shake things up. And then if somebody had an underactive root, these are people that aren't really in their bodies. So, of course, they're walking around as a human being, but they're kind of dissociated. They're kind of fragmented, daydreamy. You know, they might be thin and wispy. They are much more, I have found, since I do yoga, I have found that, you know, you get some people in yoga who are very spiritual, and they're not very well connected into the body. So they might forget to eat. They might forget to take care of their body in the way of just being a physical human being. And, you know, especially for people that have had abuse or trauma issues with the body, many times there is a sense of not feeling safe in the body, so they kind of dissociate. They do kind of fragment. They easily daydream. They don't feel as connected to even eating and really honoring their eating signals.
Right. And so in the book, you break it down. You share what a meal plan would look like for this health system healing, what detox emotional issues we might want to look at, thought pattern we might want to look at. I wonder, let's take fire, because I that was the one I was imbalanced, and you said that's the one that where many people are imbalanced. So chances are there's a high percentage listening who will be imbalanced in that. So what would I be looking at there to try and get this in balance?
Number of things, and they all kind of run together. So what fire is about is three things: having balance, having energy, and having that sense of power from within. So I might want to look at food. And so the fire system correlates to carbohydrate. And so it's, you know, many times if we're on the run, we're very busy people, we tend to eat more convenience foods. And those convenient foods are going to be typically higher in sugar, higher in processed carbohydrates. And I think that a lot of overactive fire types, they tend to, just in general, they're just running on overdrive. You know, it's kind of like these are the people that say yes to everything.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a good sense of just their energy in, their energy out. And so one of the good things for a fire type, especially through whole detox, and I kind of coach them through this in the virtual program, is to make a list of all the things that take your energy. So, and the way that you can tell is, let's just go with food. So you sit down and you have an avocado. Then you notice, how do you feel afterwards? Do I feel like I have more energy? Do I have less energy? Because there are foods that can zap us of energy, right?
Yes.
And sometimes we're taking in a lot of foods that actually drain us. We get really tired after we eat. So then we have to bring in a lot of caffeine and sugar to kind of keep us ramped up. So a fire type is always on the go. It's kind of like fire. You know, it's quick burning. And on the other side, they get easily burnt out. And so it's trying to figure out, you know, what nourishes them, what nourishes their fire, because they obviously have a good sense of drive. This is where you find a lot of athletes that are goal-oriented, or CEOs or business people, or people that have ambition are really strong in their fire. So you want to support that. It doesn't mean that we have to put out that beautiful fire, but now how do we support it and nurture it and have a little play, have some pleasure, you know, have a break from all of that hard work, because having the break actually makes you perform better in the work. But most people, you know, they just continue to work on end. So it would be about just taking a break and looking at your thoughts around how you make your way in the world as it relates to work. And we do that in Whole Detox too.
Yeah, it makes sense, because when you feel burnt out, when that fire is down to its last embers,
yes,
it's actually very hard to come out of that, because I found myself in that situation a little while ago. It's very hard, even though you've got the best intentions and the best will there. It's hard to build yourself back up out of that. So it makes perfect sense to me.
And also digestion usually goes downhill.
Mm.
So when you say it's hard to build back up, this is where, you know, the digestive fire, we talk about that in Ayurvedic medicine, you know, the acid in the stomach, which is fiery, it starts to become less or different acids. And so this can give us a lot of acid reflux, ulcers, indigestion. So one of the first things that a fire type will notice is a lot of digestive issues. Oh, I can't eat those foods anymore. I get bloated. Why is that? Well, you know, and the digestive system represents how we transform, how we take things in and assimilate. And with the fire types, they're just taking in way too much. They can't transform and assimilate as well.
And you talk on the blog, we're running out of time here, but you talk on your blog about analysis paralysis as being one of the most common maladies you see. You talk about really listening to your body and hearing what it's saying to you. I wonder if you'd just end our segment with some thoughts around that.
Yeah, that really gets us back into the root. And I think that this is a big issue for many people, to really be connected into what we feel. And one simple thing is just bodily sensation, noticing how you feel in your body, where there's pain, where, you know, I have this very simple exercise called safe place imagery. So somewhere in your body, even if you don't feel really good and connected in to that sense of your body, try to find something you really like about yourself and create a dialogue, almost like go to that place every time you have a question about something, like, should I be eating this food? Should I be meeting with this person, you know, or do you have a queasy stomach? There might be something that your body is telling you. And I think that we have to look at the body in both a literal representation and symbolic. You know, if we have a queasy stomach, what are we queasy about?
Right, right.
You know, and take it into that level.
Well, it's a fascinating book. A lot of work went into this, a lot of research.
sure did.
Yes, I can tell. And, it's very integrative, very, very good read, and it's interesting to take a whole different approach to this, I think. So I know listeners can find out more about you, Dr. Deanna Minnick, at whole-detox. Is that correct?
Yes.
Whole-detox.com. And you can also find Deanna's other website at deannaminnick.com.
Perfect, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
And I have a Facebook page. I have a group page where we go through Whole Detox themes.
Okay.
I did a whole book club.
Okay, great. Well, people can find out more about you there. We've got to run because we're right. I pushed that right to the end of the segment there. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.